is actually from February 19 to March 4th, about 2 weeks. You know, sometimes wonder why Israel is so far away. Huh? You almost have to go other side of the earth to that place. Have to travel kind of 20 few hours. So it's very tiring. But we are very thankful. We joined the Daily Audio Bible Israel 2018. The leader is Brian, is a Bible reader. He reads Bible every day in the last 11 years, or 12 years. So also he invite people to listen to that. Also he had done this Bible Land tour for 7 years. So it's a kind of experience. It's a very rich, insightful journey, but also exhausted. You know, every morning we have to wake up at 6 a.m., you know, this hotel wake-up call. If you don't answer, they call you again. And we have to be in the cafeteria 7 a.m., in the bus 8 a.m. It's just like a military campaign every day. But because we cover many places, you know, the Bible places, Old Testament, New Testament, and north, south, east, west. We cover all of them. So it's, in certain ways, very rich, insightful, in certain way, very exhausted. I think our journey divided into three parts. The first part is the wilderness. You know, we start to go to the wilderness and all the way south. And that's for 3 days. And second part is 4 days in Galilee. You know, how many of you know Galilee, right? That's where Jesus' ministry was. And for 4 days, in the last 4 days, we went to Jerusalem, you know, city of Jerusalem area. So that's how that 11th day broke down. And so I like to, because there's so many places, you know, every day, five or six places, probably 60 places. I cannot share all of them. So I just pick some places, really spoke to my heart, and describe a little bit the scenery, but I don't have picture. My wife has the picture. She's going to show all the picture, and then she will have her sharing. On February 21st was the first day we start our journey. We start a Mediterranean coast, modern ancient city called Ashdod. Ashdod is one of the five Philistine cities. So we went south. We went through many places. But one place that really caught my eyes was a wilderness of Zin. You know, that's where the Israelites was wandering for 40 years. Wow, that scenery was awesome. It's wide. It's nothing there. Just, you know, dry and barren and scary. And can you imagine the tour guide said, can you imagine if you just end up in there by yourself? You'll be so terrible. And the Israelites were there for 40 years in the wilderness. And, you know, the wilderness is a place, there's no pathway, there's no direction. You just go there, you're lost and wonder. When we were there, and the Brian just kind of invited us to think about wilderness. Is there any wilderness in our life? And that was a very amazing scenery when we stood there and we listened to his sharing. So I'd like to invite you to read some scripture. Numbers chapter 11, verse 1 to 6. Numbers 11, chapter 1 to 6. Okay. Let's read together. That's a song. Okay, let's read together. Now the people complained about their hardship in the hearing of the Lord. And when they heard them, his anger was aroused. Then fire from the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. When the people cried out to Moses, they prayed to the Lord and the fire died down. So that place was called Tabor, because fire from the Lord had burned among them. The rebel with them began to crave other food. And again, the Israelites start wailing and said, if only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost. Also the country. Now we have lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna. I think that when we were there, we have chance to read the scriptures. Brian shared about this wilderness and life. He said, when people in the wilderness, they tend to complain, you know, just complain. And then we can see here in the scriptures, I don't know how many of you, when you read the Exodus, you read the Israel story, did you realize they really love to complain? When God gave them manna, they say, we want a meat, we want a barbecue, you know, we want this and that. Why should we fill out with this? So we realized when we were in the wilderness, when we were there, Brian shared with us, you know, there's not only wilderness out here, there's a wilderness in our life. Look at Israelites, they like to complain. But isn't that similar to our situations? And the wilderness is a place, really, not our destination, right? We walk through wilderness. Wilderness is a fruitless. It's a something you go around and around, get nowhere. But sometimes we just end up in that situation. But God used us, allow that to shape our heart, change us to. Brian shared about it's a identity shift from a slavery to sonship. Praise the Lord. Maybe you are in the wilderness. Maybe I'm in the wilderness right now. How do you respond to that? So that's a place really caught my eyes. And then we continue to move south. You know, every day is very short. So then we came all the way south to a city called Eilat. And that's the southern part, the southern city of Israel. It's the biggest city. And we stood on the Red Sea shore. Wow, I tell you, it's so beautiful. The weather was so gorgeous all those days. We are so thankful to the Lord. It's not even better than here. So on the shoreline, we watched the Red Sea, and it's just half mile from the Egyptian border. You know, so why we went there? Because that, traditionally speaking, that was the spot Moses led the Israelites cross the Red Sea. So when we were there, Brian invite all of us to read Exodus chapter 14, verse 5 to 14. I invite you to read too. It's a very historic spot. Okay, let's read together. When we read, we put some emotion in. How about that? Ask you. Okay. I know you cannot see any pictures, so. Okay. When the king of Egypt was told that people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about them and said, what have we done? We have let the Israelites go and have lost their services. So he had his chariot made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of the best chariots, along with all the other chariots of Egypt, officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites who were marching out boldly. The Egyptian, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they came by the sea near. That's where we were, kind of close there, yeah. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. Listen to what Israelites say, okay? Look, does it make sense or not? What have you done to us? Can we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. Okay, can we hold on here? It was whose idea that Israelites will come out of Egypt? I know it's God's, but who took initiative? Did Israelites cry out to God every day, say, save us? And the God sent Moses, right? But right now they face a crisis and they change their words. Why did you lead us? When we read that, I just feel so funny. And isn't that also true with our situation? Sometimes when the situation is so difficult for us, even though we know it's God's will, we change our words. We change, oh, God, why did you lead us to this? And then look at how did God respond to them. This is very encouraging. I want you all to read. We read this together as a promise from the Lord. Okay, let's read. Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptian you see today will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still." Wow, it's very interesting. The Lord say, be still, stand firm and watch. So Brian Shearer said, you need to stand firm and watch how the Lord will work for us. I believe that's not only the promise for Israelites, also promise for each one of us as we face. You know, it's difficult, right? You face the Red Sea. Maybe a couple million people. How can you cross that? Then you have special force from Egypt pursue behind you to bring you back. And what can you do? But very interesting. God say, stand firm. And what? Watch what God will deliver them. So I think that was memorable to me. You know, it was a beautiful day. It's about sunset. We're on the border of the Israel and Egypt. And so that's quite a lesson and spoke to me. So that was the first day. The second day, I like to share, you know, there are many things, but one thing is very interesting to us is the Dead Sea. The second day, toward the end of the day, we rushed back to our hotel. Before we rushed back to the hotel, we walked on the shoreline of the Dead Sea, and very salty. And Brian read the Lot story, you know, Sodom Gomorrah Lot story. And then we rushed back to the hotel. Then we went to the Red Sea to float on the Red Sea. You cannot sink. Yeah, it was so funny. I was float, and then I tried to stand up. I cannot stand up. They say, what can you do? Oh, you just try to float to the close to the shoreline. You see a lake. It's the floating power so big. It's very interesting. And then we had the mud bath. You know, everybody put on the mud. But because we all busy do that, we don't have a chance to take a picture, you know, we cannot, so we don't have the picture of that, but that mud is from the Dead Sea too, it's very good for your skin, yeah, a lot of minerals. So that's the second day highlight to me, that's kind of fun part. And then we come to the second part, to the Galilee. The first day on the Galilee was February 24th, Galilee was the area Jesus spent his most ministry there. You know, he did a lot of things there. The first stop, we went to Cana. Anyone know what's happened in Cana? Yeah, wedding, and what else? Yeah, water became wine, and Jesus made the best wine out of water. We went to Cana. By the way, it seemed like in the Holy Land, the Bible Land, the Aries Spa have the historical event. They always have a church there. It's a Catholic church or Greek Orthodox church, you know, to protect, to memorize of that, in memory of that. So we went there. There was a church there, and there were many people. We went in there, and the tour group really know how to arrange. So they arrange a occasion for all the married couple to rededicate their marriage vow. So there are 30-plus married couple were there, and then we were one of them. And this year is our 35th anniversary. Wow, time flew by fast. And it's kind of, Molly and I, we were very calm. 老夫老妻, old husband, old wife. But it still kind of is a emotional moment, and we had a picture. We also got a certificate too. How much for that certificate? think $5 or something. Original, we debate whether we want that or not. Yeah, but we took it. And so that's quite a place. And then after that, we went to a different plot. And then we came back to the east side of the lake called Kersey. In the Bible called Gerasenes. I don't know anybody remember that. That's the place Jesus delivered a person was demonized. How many of you know that story? A person filled with demons called Legion, maybe at least 2,000 demons, and he lived in the cave, in the tomb. So we went there, the two old guys showed us where the tomb was, and Jesus took initiative, right? He crossed the lake. He faced the storm. He calmed the storm and came all the way there just to deliver him, to cast out the demons. And how many of you know where the demon go? Went to the pigs. 2,000 of them. And the story was amazing. So Brian was reading the story to us, and he said, it's very amazing that why Jesus, after Jesus had done this such a wonderful thing, right? A person demonized all his life. He was naked, lived in the tomb, and used the stone, cut himself day and night, crying out, have no future. And Jesus came to deliver him, to heal him. But the people over there, they came to see this miracle, and the results, they want Jesus, they plead with Jesus, say, would you please leave us alone and just move on? And the Brian, you know, there's a Bible reader, and he said, sometimes Jesus disrupts our life. He came in. He makes us very uncomfortable. The people there, they know this demonized person. They say, what can you do? Let it be, right? But suddenly there are 2,000 pig rush in over cliff and die. Quite a loss. So they want Jesus to live. They don't want Jesus to stay there. But the scripture says that man was totally healed, put on the dress, come to senses. And then when Jesus was leaving, he wanted to follow Jesus. Jesus said, no, you don't need to follow me. Just go back to your old town to tell what Jesus had done to you. So his story spread out to all places. And that area is called Decapolis. It's the 10th city. Okay, my wife gave me signal, I need to move on faster. So after that, we get on the boat of the Sea of Galilee, and that's very unusual thing is we get on the boat, and Brian asked the captain turn on the engine, so we were on the Sea of Galilee for 7 minutes to be silent. He said, we were so busy, so now we have 7 minutes silent. We want everybody don't do anything. Turn off the cell phone and just listen to what God speak to us. Oh, that's quite a moment. It's a beautiful day in the Galilee Sea. The group of maybe 100 people and all silent and listen to God. And he say, you know, sometimes we cannot hear from God because we're so busy. Even we become silent, we still cannot hear from God because we are so used to be noisy. We cannot handle the silence. That's the interruption. So that's a very special moment. Then I had to skip, okay, because the time. I share with my wife the time, so she gave me a signal already, second time. Also, we went to another place that day. Is the last day. It's called Church or Primacy of St. Peter. That's where remember, after Jesus resurrected, he appeared to disciples. Jesus instructed them how to catch fish, right? And Jesus prepared a breakfast for them. And after that, Jesus restored Peter, right? He asked Peter 3 times, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? Peter answered 3 times. And the Bible says Peter was very disturbed that Jesus asked him 3 times. Every time when he asked Peter, Peter answered, he said, feed my sheep, feed my lamb. And then Jesus prophesied about Peter. When he was young, he can go wherever. When he's old, people will bring him to somewhere he doesn't want to go. It's prophesied about Peter's martyrdom. One day he will die for Jesus. And the story went on, and Peter turned around and looked at John, and he asked Jesus, say, how about him? About his life? And the Brian wants us to think about the question is, Jesus said, what is that do to you? What is that to you? You must follow me. I think that question is really worth of all thinking. Sometimes we feel our identity, our value by comparing with others. How about him? How about him? The Lord today say to all of us from the trip is, what's that to you? You must follow Jesus. Amen? I must follow Jesus. No matter how the situation, how other people say, what other people done, I must follow Jesus. So that was the highlight till the end of the day, the learning. On the last day of the February, we finally arrived at Jerusalem. I'd like to share a little bit when we were in that area. Jerusalem is a very, if we compare the three regions, you know, wilderness is someplace, nothing there, you know, not much going on there, very quiet. And then Galilee is a place, very green, there's a lot of agriculture, it's a beautiful place. Very quiet, also beautiful place, fruitful place. But the Jerusalem is a very, I would say, one of the kind of city. It's a very contrasting, a modern and the ancient. Also, there are three major religions there. You know, there's a contention there. Very tense city. You go there, the road is very narrow, and the people are very, so many people there. And they're also not the flat, it's the level. Like Jerusalem, like in the high on the hill. So once you enter there, you feel different. Galilee was so nice, relaxed, suddenly so stressed out. It's not stressed out like in the Bay Area, you know. It's totally different. I cannot describe it. But when we start on the first day in Jerusalem, we start very early. 5:30, I had to get on the day even harder. And the 7 o'clock in the bus, because we will go to the Temple Mount. That's where the old temple used to be. You know, the temple was destroyed by 70 AD. It's no more there, but that's the location. But right now, there's no temple of God there, but it's the mosque. It's controlled by Muslim. And so we have to go early. We try to be the first group. So otherwise, there's so many people. And then we finally got in like 7:50. I want to share something is when we go there, there are so many rules there, very strict. You know, the woman had to dress, had to cover this, cover that, and almost cover everything. And the man and woman cannot touch each other, cannot show affection in that area, cannot kiss, cannot. So the tour guide say, I remind you, okay, don't do that. And otherwise, they have a patrol there. They will escort you out. They will ask you to leave there. Also, when you go there, you have to watch out what you say. You know, you cannot say anything, you know. It's not to show respect to their religion. So there's a lot of restriction. There's a lot of oppression there. When we're there, we're kind of nervous, you know. So that's just the situation. But the temple wasn't there any longer. But they say, somewhere there, that was the old temple was there, and hopefully one day, the temple of God will rebuild right there. So that's that day in Jerusalem. We go to Temple Mount. After that, we went to Bethlehem. Bethlehem right now is in the Arab area. So when we go there, we need to pass the gate. It's kind of street security. It's very different. It's hard to describe. The reason we go to Bethlehem, we want to see where Jesus was born. So as I shared before, in every historical site, there are many chapels. But because the first chapel built there was old, ruined, and the second chapel built on that, so they have the chapel after chapel on top of each other. So in order to see where Jesus was born, we had to walk all the way down there in the lowest place. And there was so many people. And the chapel was in the renovation, so it took a long time to walk down all the way there to see almost like a semi-cave. That's where manger was, there, where Jesus was born there. But also, it's an awesome moment. It's a mystery. It's an awesome moment. God was born here. God was born here. So, in a way, many of our members say, why you need to take so long to wait to see this? You know, it's a long waiting. There's so many people. But in a way, we kind of encounter a mystery. You know, God became a man, born there. And then after that, we went to see, Bethany, back to a Jewish control area to see Bethany. How many of you know what's happening in Bethany? Lazarus, yeah. So we went to see Lazarus' tomb, you know, and Lazarus' tomb also is very deep there, down there. And each time they only allow 8 people to walk in, very small. So you had to be very humble. We had to walk down there. We had to crawl into something, the cave, and into his tomb. It's kind of quite an experience, but it's a wonderful place that Jesus raised him from the dead. On the last day from the second last day from the trip, that day we rushed back to Jerusalem about 4:30 p.m. We went to the Western Wall. The Western Wall according to the Orthodox Jews, supposed to be the holiest spot because that spot is the closest to the temple of God. So God's presence there is very strong. So they believe that. So you see a lot of film about Wailing Wall, right? You see the Orthodox Jews, they were praying in front of the Wailing Wall, and they kind of just cry out to God for many things, and that's the spot. So on March 2nd, we after a whole day tour outside Jerusalem City, we came back there. We went there, the tour guide wanted us to have some time to experience that, to observe how Orthodox Jews, they observe the Sabbath. We came back like 4:30, you know, going to turn dark soon. And as we went there, also he gave us a chance to pray at the Wailing Wall. So he wanted us to write a prayer request. So we all write a prayer request. So when we went to the Wailing Wall, we can stick prayer requests into the wall. And we saw so many in there, all kinds of language. And they say they have a society there, the Orthodox Jews. They're going to collect all the prayer requests. They will not read your prayer requests. They collect all your prayer requests, no matter what kind of language. They will bring to a certain place. They're going to bury them there. So that's they proceed. And based upon they say, when you pray there, your prayer will be answered very quickly. So I went there and I pray quite a while. I'll let you see what I wear when I went there to pray. They send out some kind of love care. All the men wear. So I wear that and went there to pray. I just pray very fervently and I put a prayer request in. It's quite an experience. And then after that, somebody there, he know the area well. He just say, there's a rabbi hole there. You can go in to see. So I went there. Wow, quite a hole there. All the different rabbis, they were praying so hard to God. And they read the Torah, you know, read the Old Testament, and so devout to the Lord. It really touched me. You know, they really honor God's law. And that was the Sabbath. By the way, Israelites, Jewish people really honor Sabbath. I'll just give you an example. In our hotel, there's an elevator called Sabbath Elevator. Is that right? And that's you can see the picture. That means that you cannot every floor will stop because it's continuing. You cannot stop. And you just first, second, third, how many floor? Every floor will stop because no labor, no work. That means Sabbath. Okay. And finally, I like share with the last day. The last day we follow the footsteps of Jesus and try to experience, to see his love. And we went to the top of the Olive Mountain. You know that. That's where Jesus ascend, and we stop by the place where Jesus wept over the Jerusalem city, wept over the holy temple. Then we went to the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus prayed, betrayed, and we went to the chapel, and we were there. We were singing, and then we crossed over the Kidron Valley. You know, between the Olive Mountain is on the east side of the Jerusalem, is on the east side of the temple. So we from the east side we walked through the Kidron Valley to the other side. We went to Bethsaida. That's where Jesus healed 38 years paralytic, and then we from there we go to the tradition route of Jesus, the suffering route. It's called Via Dolorosa, right? The way of cross. We went through that. The irony was in that route, it's all the gift shop. There's hundreds of them next to each other. And then those people try to say, $1, $1, $5 crucifix. It's just very commercialized. It's totally doesn't let you feel that was a route Jesus walked through and suffered. But that's a reality. And then we visit Church of Holy Sepulchre, and that's where referred to the location Jesus was crucified and the resurrected. There's so many people, the line was so long, so we didn't go through that. We went to have a lunch. Then we also stopped by upper room, you know, where Jesus had the Last Supper and where the Pentecost occurred. On the Pentecost day, they were filled with the Holy Spirit and how the church started. Also, we came back through Kidron Valley to visit court of High Priest Caiaphas' place, where Jesus was interrogated, physically abused, and put in the dungeon. That's also is a place Peter denied Jesus three times. So finally, the last day, we visit Garden Tomb. They had different theory. The first, that the Church of Holy Sepulchre, maybe it's a traditional theory about where Jesus was crucified and buried. The Garden Tomb is another place. And so there are two theories. So we are not too sure which place is. But anyway, we have the Holy Communion together at the Garden Tomb. And it's very beautiful to reflect upon Christ's love for each one of us. And that night we have a dinner together. And to give thanksgiving, and we celebrate Brian's birthday. It's just a very exhausted, nonstop trip. And that night we flew back. We have to fly all the way back, 20-few hours. But I just share with you as a family member, I'm very thankful to the Lord. I learned a lot still. There are too many things. I try to bring some to share with you. Now I'd like to turn the time to Marlene. She has a picture. Then you can see there's something there.
Because in the past, I always followed the Daily Audio Bible on their Israel trip virtually. And I always said, I wish I can be there. So this year, I was there. I was so happy. I didn't have the feeling of happiness for a long, long time. So I was really excited and really happy. And it was an awesome trip and worth every penny. And we were well taken care of by our tour company, Morningstar Tours. And they work with El Sarel to a company in Israel. They took care of us from before the trip all the way till we left Israel. Before we went there, they sent us two books. One is about a devotional book about the land that Jesus has walked. And the other book is about the different places, introducing each place. And also the prayer request, the prayer list to pray starting a month before we leave. And then when we got there, the tour guide is waiting for us outside the checkpoint. And everybody received a backpack, a small backpack, with this earphone that's called Whispers. And we had to wear that to listen to our tour guide, O'Brien, when he gives his devotional. because Holiness is really filled with tourists. I mean, so many tourists, so many buses. It's just so congested, like in all these famous places. So there's no way you can hear your tour guide. So everybody wear earphones, and so you can listen to the tour guide very clearly. And also, we got also they gave us journals to write on and water bottles. So we were, and a hat too. So very well taken care of. Before when we arrived at the hotel, they already checked in all our rooms. The keys are ready for you. The tags with your room numbers for you to attach to your luggages, so the bellboy can bring it to your hotels. They just took care of us very detailed. So we are just like, you know, we don't have to worry about anything on the trip. So this is when we arrived at Tel Aviv. And we were fed very well. We had buffet lunch. No, I'm sorry, buffet breakfast. And then we had buffet dinner. That's all, my first dinner. And for delicious desserts. I mean, it's like buffet, dessert bar, buffet salad bar, buffet entrees, bread bar, drink bar, everything. And no, I didn't eat all that by myself. I did share it with Joseph. And the accommodations are really good. I mean, they're first class. This was sort of interesting. I saw this sign called the shelter. And on every floor of the hotel, there is a room called shelter. And just in case there's a bomb attack, everybody go into the shelter because it's bomb-proof. And then here's the Shabbat elevator. Shabbat starts on Friday night. Huh? Oh, Shabbat elevator. So on Shabbat elevator, Jewish, they shut everything down. They don't work. They don't have businesses. And they cannot do any work. So on Shabbat, you don't have to punch the buttons, you know, like in the elevator. That's work. So the elevator stops at every floor. So it's going to take you a long time if you had your hotel rooms on the 12th floor. Okay. Oh, what happened here? And these are just views from our hotel room. So, you know, this is at Elot, which is the Red Sea, where Red Sea is. This is our sunset over Sea of Galilee from our hotel room. And this is Brian Harden. He started reading the Bible nonstop over 12 years ago. And he thought he just wanted to read it every day and just put on a podcast, but he got so popular, there are more than 1 million downloads every day. So his ministry became worldwide. And one thing so special about this tour with Brian Harden, he's a very, I would say he really, he's a friend of God. He has an intimate relationship with God. And the whole focus of this tour is to connect our hearts with God's heart. So at every site, he will give a devotional, and there will be time given to us to meditate. This is where the Red Sea is, at the border of Egypt. And we stopped there, and that's what Jesus was sharing about the Exodus passage about crossing the Red Sea and God's deliverance. And we stopped there and we prayed for the persecuted Christians in Egypt. And so this is the Red Sea, where we have some time to meditate on the past, on this, what happened there. And this is something really fun. The meals we pay, the buffet breakfast and buffet lunch, dinner are all included, but lunch are not included. But they are 3 surprise lunches that was offered. That was a treat, a complimentary Daily Audio Bible, so they pay for it. And the places that we go to on those complimentary lunches is like a reservation with, it's just our group. There's no other tour groups there. So it's really a private time to have the whole place to ourselves. And this is called the Bedouins, lunch. Bedouins are the nomadic people. They are the one who knows the desert best. And they have this custom that if a stranger comes to them, they will offer them food and accommodation for 3 days without any questions asked. So you can be a fugitive on the run, and you go there, they will not ask you anything about you for 3 days, and that's their hospitality. So the food were made by the Bedouins, and you sit on these mats, and the food are on this big tray, and they were delicious. So we had meat, potatoes, and the veggies, and the hummus, and orange juice, and water. And then, this is another dream came true. I always want to see the tabernacle in the wilderness. So this is a tabernacle at Timnath Park, and that's in the desert of Negev. And so this is the picture taken from further out. And the wood that was used for the poles to carry the tabernacle, the ark, it's all made out of acacia wood. So this is an acacia tree. And I know what God said to use this wood because it's tough and it's hard and it endures for a long, long time. And then this is the burnt offering and the wash basin. They had to wash their hands, clean themselves before they can enter the tabernacle. These are the priests. So there's the high priest with his ephod on and maybe his son, the priest. And you notice they're barefooted. And the reason they're barefooted because they're standing on holy ground. And then this is altar incense. And then the lampstand with the seven lamps. And here's the table of showbread. And here's the Ark of Covenant. And you can see the two angels hovering over the mercy seat. And inside the Ark of Covenant are three things. Two tablets of the Ten Commandments, the manna, and the rod, the sprouted rod of Aaron. And then this is at Bashan. And there's this amphitheater. So this guy from another group, he was singing How Great Thou Art. And no microphone, but it was really loud because of the acoustic. And he was so good, and we all clap our hands, and we say, encore, encore. So he walked back and sang the song, There's Something About That Name. And it was so awesome because his voice was so beautiful and so strong. And we were sitting on top, and we can hear him very clearly. And then we went to Masada. I don't know how many people have heard of Masada before. Okay, Masada was a fortress built by Herod the Great. 70 years later, the last remnant of the Jewish rebels fled there and used it as a refuge. And they chose death over slavery. They are now willing to let Roman capture them and make them slaves. And the tour guide was explaining that the Roman soldiers encamped down there, down the hills, about 10,000 of them, but there were another 10,000 of Jewish slaves who did all the work, who built all the snake trails and carrying the food and serving the Roman soldiers. So when those slaves come up, the rebels won't want to kill their own people, so they cannot really fight back. But they kill themselves. They have the father killed the wife and the children. Then they assign 10 people to kill all the fathers, the men, and then one person to kill the rest of the men, the 9 people, and then he killed himself last. And then there were a few women and children that were survivors, and they survived to tell the story about what happened. So they chose death over being a slave, over slavery. So this is, the one I just saw you is the model. This is Masada. So you see Herod has 3 floors of his palace on the side of the hill. Okay, so this is the Dead Sea, and you see the beach. It's all salt. And then this is our hotel in the back, see the beach? That's where we swam, at the back of the hotel. And it's really important that when we go in the water, we float on our back and not, you know, on our stomach, because you cannot drink that water. It's very salty and very bitter. And if you do, you probably have to send you to the hospital. It can kill you, you know. So, yes? Yes, but we were in the beach. Huh? Yeah, we had to walk through the water, the beach, the ocean. That's where we swam, not the swimming pool. That's the part of the hotel, but we swam. The hotel is next to the Dead Sea, so we swam in the Dead Sea. So I somehow got some water in through my nostril when I was trying to get up, and I really tasted the bitterness of the water. Oh, man, I had to really spin it out. You know, I was so scared that it's going to hurt my throat or something. But it does taste very bitter, so you don't want to swallow any of the water there. But it's really fine. You just float. And you had to get yourself, paddle yourself to the shore so you can get up because of the pressure, you know, from the salt, the density, just keep you afloat. You just cannot get up. Yeah, and after we put the mud over our body, and then we rinse it off. This is a toilet, the public toilet. And you might think, wow, definitely they sure there's no privacy. But you know they do have privacy. Do you know why? Elliot, what do you think? I know you have a bright mind. Why do they have privacy, even though these are the toilets they sit on? That's the seats. They sit between the holes. I mean, between, you know, the two white spots where they put their legs to sit on. You know the toilet seats, right? But don't in a row. Toby, do you know why? What kind of clothing they wear? Robes. So they'll cover up. So while they're going doing their private business, they can have chit-chat with their neighbor. No, they sit on it. They sit on it. Like the two thing can be the toilet seat. Yeah. Well, I will tell you my bathroom story, what happened to me. So, by the way, the bathroom in Israel is extremely clean. You know, Jewish people really care about cleanliness, right? Because the Bible always talks about clean, I mean unclean, and how you have to clean. So they all are very clean and smell really good. And, you know, men and women's bathroom, they all have stalls with doors from top to bottom. Some maybe has a little space on top, but it's all the way to the bottom. So there's no way you can get out if you're stuck. Well, guess what? I got stuck in the bathroom. I couldn't turn that knob to unlock the door. And I'm stuck, and I don't know how I'm going to get out of here. So I cry out, tell Olga, Olga's my tool, tell Olga, come and help me. And so Olga got the people who that works there, and he had to use a screwdriver, I don't know what he used, to unlock from the outside. That's how I got out. So I know I wasn't the only one, because a couple other people had it experience. So after that, I was afraid to lock the doors. I'm just not one to have the experience again. Okay. This is not a toilet. We were at the first century synagogue, and there is a seat called the Moses seat, and that's the seat for the rabbi or the teacher of the law when they teach. So I said, Joseph, you're the pastor. Go sit there. Let me take a picture. And this is the Dome of Rock, the mountain mount, like Joseph shared. They had very strict, oppressive rules, especially about the dress code. Woman, you had to cover up from neck all the way down. This lady wore a very dressy pants. Well, she didn't pass the dress code. So they have a bunch of these green skirts for you to put on over, you know, so you'll be able to go in. So Brian Harden's son, Tyler, he was in shorts. And no shorts, nothing can be exposed. So he had to wear that skirt too. Too bad I wasn't able or fast enough to take that picture of him. But that's how strict they are. Men and women, you cannot be kissing or holding hands or put your arms around them. No hugs. You cannot bring anything or say anything that's for Christianity or Judaism. And there were a group of Jewish people. And guess what? When the Jewish people are in the Temple Mount, they're escorted by the Israeli soldiers. So we see soldiers with guns walking ahead of them, on the side of them, and behind them. Yeah, to protect them, because Temple Mount is controlled by the Muslims. And in the beginning of my title page, I didn't put that famous picture as my title page. I don't want to recognize that as the symbol for Jerusalem, because it's a mosque, and they believe that Abraham sacrificed Isaac there. Where did they get that deception from? They believe Isaac sacrificed Ishmael. I'm sorry, Ishmael, not Isaac. Ishmael there, which is totally false. So, but strict security. And then this is the fun part. Another fun thing we did is the archaeological dig. And so the guy was explained to us how to do the digging and how to separate, how to find the treasures and all the dirt, non-essential, you put in one bucket. If you find anything you think is a treasure, you put in another bucket. And then, so we had two groups because we have about 87 people, tourists, and so one people dig one room, another person dig the other room, and we are the cheap laborers, okay? So people are digging, and Sarah, our youngest member, 17-year-old, she dug up a ring that's over 2,000 years old, and we were all so excited. Of course, you don't get to keep it because all the treasures go to a special place for them to, you know, study and stuff. And then after, we had to bring our bucket out, and we had to sift them and look for treasures. And then, then we got two choices. We whether can go to excavated caves or non-excavated caves. So the non-excavated caves is like you have to go through a lot of tunnels and they're narrow and you have to bend down. You know, I'm too old for that. But a lot of old people did it too, but it was hard. But I went to the excavated ones. In that area, there are over 5,000 man-made caves, and they're all underground. Why do they make these caves? Because it's really hot in Israel, in the desert. And we went in February, which is the best time to go. The weather is so nice, just like now, maybe a little hotter. But starting May, it gets really hot. So Israelites are really smart. They make their workroom underground. So they dug up like over 5,000 man-made caves. And that's where they process and making olive oils, you know, whatever they do. They work in those man-made caves underground. So these are there's the olive press, and we have to go down the stairs into the caves. And there are cisterns down there. And then this Cana, we had renew our marriage ball on our 35th marriage year. And then this is Capernaum, where Jesus, you know, preached in the synagogue there. And at Capernaum, the synagogue, they have two rooms. So this is probably for the men, and it's another room for the ladies and for the women and children. And they have a room for women and children because that's where their children get most of their education, is in the synagogue. Okay, this is Kersey. Gerasenes, where the demonic guy lives up there in the caves. Jesus cast the demons, a legion of demons out of him, sent them to the swine, down into the Sea of Galilee, and the town, what? Okay, tell me to hurry up, okay. All right. So this is going down to Lazarus' tomb in Bethany, and we had to go down, down, down. And this is inside the tomb. Okay, this is the garden tomb where the Protestant think this might be another place Jesus could have, his body might have been laid. This is inside the tomb. And I like this sign. He said, "He's not here, for he is risen." Right? If he has not risen, we don't need to be at church or be here worshiping. And so this is a trough next to the tomb where they put a stone. And of course, I tried to row this storm. It's too heavy for me to row. And, oh, so this is a secure bus. They said, oh, tomorrow we had to transfer to a secure bus for half a day. And so I asked the tour guide, what is a secure bus? He said, it's a bulletproof bus. Oh, a bulletproof bus. Why do we have to go on a bulletproof bus? And that is because we'll be traveling through Palestinian villages who are not friendly toward Christians or Jewish people, because we are on our way to Shechem and Shiloh. So we had to be traveling this bus, secure bus, where it's bomb-proof, I guess. And then at Bethlehem, we were only taken to this place that they would want us to shop at. And also, they always want to take us to Christian-owned restaurants and shop, to patronize them. Because Christians are being persecuted, and like this place, the Kendalls, owned by the Kendall family, the grandfather is the one who received the Dead Sea Scroll from this shepherd boy when he threw a rock in the Qumran cave, and they found the pot was broken, and the shepherd went to see what's in there, and then he found the Dead Sea Scroll. So the grandfather of this family is the one who received the Dead Sea Scroll. So he sold everything to the Museum of Antiquity of Israel, but he saved this last pot for himself, display at the store. There are a lot of things like one to buy, like that one, too expensive and too big. I won't be able to carry it home or pay for it. So I just took a picture for memory and enjoy on the picture. And that beautiful carving, like this can be cost like $15,000. Like it's huge. It's really big, you know, by a very skilled sculptor. And this is made out of olive wood. Okay, precious moments. So this is where I got baptized, in the Jordan River. It's very dirty and muddy and slippery. And the Jordan River, half the river, like we were on the Israeli side, the other side belongs to Jordan. So there are soldiers with their guns patrolling, make sure you know everything is okay. And okay, so when I got baptized, they asked three questions. Number one, have you received Jesus as your Savior and Lord? Number two, are you willing to die for your faith? Number three, are you willing to leave you without Christ in the river, in the water, buried there? Say yes, 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 and I got baptized. And this is the Sea of Galilee. Joseph, we are about to embark on that boat. And this is the moment where everything's shut off, quiet for 7 minutes. And Brian said, this is my gift to you, 7 minutes of silence. And then this is Mount Olive, and this is the olive tree. Maybe Jesus pray here. You know, it's a huge old olive tree. And then, so next to this Mount Olive, there's this church. And the acoustics fantastic. So we sang a few hymns in there, and it really sounded heavenly. That's wonderful. That's really, like, inspirational. And these are the steps to Caiaphas' house. So maybe Jesus had taken these steps to his house on the night of betrayal. And this is inside Caiaphas' house where he was imprisoned. This is inside of the old Jerusalem city. See how narrow the streets are and lined with shops. This is one of the shops and more. This is the Church of Sepulchre, where they traditionally viewed this as the burial site and resurrection of Jesus. And they have, everything's enshrined, you know, and if you want to stay in line, there's a long line. It takes an hour and a half to stay in line to get to see the tomb. We don't have that time to spare, so we went to have lunch instead. And afterwards, we are to gather at this place. So we were gathering, and we were in the group. And suddenly, this lady come and waving this book called Sneezing Jesus, written by Brian Harden. And somebody said, oh, look, the book Sneezing Jesus. And the lady with the book came up and said, oh, I prayed like an hour ago that I can meet, that God can bring us together because I'm here for work. And I know you guys are in Jerusalem. And I just prayed an hour ago that I can meet up with you guys. And she did. So Brian Harden get to sign the book for her. And that was really exciting because I answered to her prayer. And then this is the shore where after Jesus' resurrection, he asked Peter, "Do you love me?" Jesus said, "You know I do." And Jesus said, "Feed my lamb." And Jesus asked him three times. And then Peter said, "Well, what about him?" Jesus said, "What's that to you? You follow me." And this is the wedding wall. The wedding wall is divided into two parts. The one on top is for the men, and the other side is for the woman. Everything's segregated. And this is the men's side. And this is where the rabbis prayed. Yeah, and that's Joseph over there with his hat on. And then we have the communion. That's Brian Hart on the right and Bishop Sandy Green on the left. And we receive communion. That's a really good way to end up the tour. Desert of Zin. And I just want to share what God really spoke to me through this, too. And that's what the desert looked like. Nothing. Very barren. Hot. No food. No water. Hot heat. Of course, the Lord supplied the clouds in the day, right, to cover them, give them shade, and fire in the night. But I wouldn't want to be there for 40 years wandering in that place. And I cannot imagine how they survived. And I don't think I blame them for being grumbling, complaining, because if I had to live there for 40 years and wander around, I will be complaining, grumbling too. I mean, I am already grumbling, complaining with all the things I have, abundance I have. Can you imagine when I am there? I have nothing. I'm going to grumble more. So I think it's very human to be grumbling and complaining. But Brian shared that when we are in the wilderness, God wants us to have an identity shift. Identity shift from a slave to sonship. And I can really relate to that. You know, I just retired last year. And all my life, I feel that my relationship with God is servant and master relationship. Because I have so much responsibilities. Now, I have to take care of a home. I take care of everything in the household so Joseph can just be concentrated and devoted in the ministry. He doesn't have to worry about anything else because I took care of everything else. So that kept me very busy raising the kids. In our church ministry and work is pretty demanding. It takes a lot of my energy. I feel very exhausted when I get home at night. So I was really rushing and hustling just try to fulfill all my responsibilities. And I feel very burdened and tired and exhausted. And I always have this longing. I want to have an intimate relationship with God. But I just feel like I didn't have the time to slow down and to be quiet and be still and draw near to God and to get to know him as my Heavenly Father, get to enjoy myself as his daughter. I just didn't have that time because I was so busy trying to meet all the responsibility, fulfilling all my responsibilities at home, at work, at church. So that's why I took an early retirement. Just to slow down. Because someone said, love and hurry is incompatible. Because if I'm always in a hurry, I wouldn't have the love and the patience with people. So maybe in the past you see me really just running around trying to get things done. That's how it was. But now, the Lord and me go through this wilderness experience. Yeah, he wants me to have an identity shift. I'm no longer a servant. I am a friend. I am a child of God, and I need to enjoy him and his relationship, and my relationship with him. Another thing about being the wilderness experience is that God is shaping us and molding us and getting the Egypt out of our life, the worldly, who we were before Christ. He's getting all that out of me, and he's processing me and transforming me to the likeness of Jesus Christ. And I need to cooperate with him. Keep asking, get me out of this wilderness, but rather to embrace it. But, you know, I want to end this with you, but I want to end with something that I want to share with you, that God really loves me a whole lot, and he does take care of me. So let's end this so like a funny note. You know, God foresees what we will go through, and sometimes we don't know that it's going to happen, but he did it because he loves us, and he spared me from the most, could have been the most embarrassing moment of my life. So after the baptism, I was the first one to be baptized because I wanted to get back to the change room where nobody's there, because the change room is a one big room with no privacy, just one big room where you change your clothes, you shower, you rinse it off, and get dressed. So I went to the change room and said, oh, thank God, there's nobody here. I have the whole room to myself, I have privacy. So I quickly, undress, rinse myself off, and I'll dry off and put on my clothes. After I got dressed, guess what happened? A group of men start walking in into the change room. And that's when I realized I was in the I was in the men's change room. God was so gracious. And he spared me from the most embarrassing moment of my life. See, his love endures forever. So I have seen that God has really spared me from a lot of nightmares in the past. But there are some things in my life that I wish he can just solve it quickly. But he doesn't. I say, Lord, I know you love me because I see how you intervene and spare me from potential nightmares. Because he can foresee what's going to happen, and you were there to take care of it, even though I wasn't aware. But Lord, I had this in my life, and it's so out of my control. And I've been praying for over 15 years, and it seemed like you're not doing anything. But you know something? Because the reason that the Lord hasn't resolved the issue that I'm facing, because he's not done with me yet. He's still processing me. He hasn't fulfilled his purpose in me through this journey. So I'm going to embrace it. So that's my sharing.
Thank you. Thank you, Marlene. How about let's arise and conclude with a word of prayer.